This episode of the Team Never Quit podcast is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal celebrates veterans of all branches and their families on Veterans Day and every day of the year. If you want to learn more about how they can help you, go visit NavyFederal.org.
When your father, when your earthly father, who God put in your life to be your protector and give you the security, especially a little girl, the security that you need and how you see yourself, when that relationship is fractured like mine was, you have such a warped view of who God is and who you think you are in his eyes.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're seeing this show. So today, before we dive into our really special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week we've got, if you were going to delete one invention in history, what would that be?
Nuclear bomb.
I was thinking that too.
That is a good one.
It's not that hard to kill people.
Right.
And that thing kills indiscriminately. So you're not just killing the people who are starting the problems. You're killing the people that are also having to deal with them. And a lot of people by design, humanity and human nature get caught up in their surroundings and with that. And that thing kills indiscriminately. I'd rather just go back to hand-to-hand fighting. Gets the point across a lot harder.
For sure.
I think pop-up ads.
Oh, pop-ups are horrible. Do it like that? Spam calls.
Spam calls. Terrible.
When I was a kid, it was very common and accepted by society to prank call people.
Oh, right.
Which was all in good fun. Like, hey, have you seen your refrigerator? You know, that kind of thing. But the spam calls are too much.
The robo calls.
Right. And like,
never ending.
I probably get 15 a day. I have to keep my phone on silent.
Wow.
Because of how many spam calls I get. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a good one. I would definitely agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I think too, in the world we live, it's ironic to be saying this on a podcast, but if you go back, I would say either roll it out differently or just never have social media.
Mm.
I think social media has a lot of good points, mm-hmm. but I think the bad has started to outweigh the good, especially with AI and mm-hmm. everything that's coming. I think AI is going to be so deceptive. Now, as a Christian, I know it's part of how he's ushering in the end of the world and how the things that the Bible predicts are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a necessary evil, like the cross, you know, mm-hmm. was a necessary evil. But I don't like it. As a mother, I wish it was never a thing, ever.
Yeah.
And whoever invented Snapchat, like where it disappears, so as a mom, I can't go in and bust my children when they're doing stupid stuff. Like that person, I would like to get a hold of in a room by myself for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think social media has become more of a detriment. I think there's ways to use it positively, but I don't think most people are doing that.
There should be two nets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One where there's something, if it's on this net, you know it's been verified and double-checked and has...
Yes.
Because there's facts, which is nature and everything around it, and
right.
there's truth, which is a human thing.
Right.
Which can also change very from human to human.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
But, and with AI, it's the way they developed it so it wouldn't hurt anybody, but they did. But humans hurt people.
Yeah, exactly.
And humans use things to hurt people with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's the same way with... with social media. Remember when I first started? Everything was fun. It was great.
Oh, I was so happy to get in touch with people I hadn't seen since high school graduation. It was wonderful. It's almost that's like how it would have stayed.
You got to go through an education and get to a certain age, like a driver's license, before you're allowed to get on there.
Yes. And with
or
check-ups.
Pass a test. Yes. Can you imagine you have to pass a test to get on social media?
Yes.
Like a psychological exam before you even get into our populace and start spreading.
I agree.
Because it spreads fast.
I agree.
With the towns and everything, you're isolated with each other. And with that, man, it's its own kingdom, right?
It is. And you know, these kids are getting a false sense of their friends, right? Like they feel like they have, you know, 1,200 friends, when in reality, they don't never even met some of these people. And then when those comments come that are hurtful, and then these challenges on TikTok and, you know, just all of the things. My kids don't know a world without social media. Yeah. You know, I mean, I remember signing up for Facebook and being all excited to be able to reconnect with my friends. But that's all my kids know, you know, is a world with social media.
Mm-hmm. Internet and tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to think, man, humans really... they don't evolve, but our tech does.
Yeah, way faster than dog years. You know,
which
it's like I can't
us.
Keep up with it. Yeah, it's so quickly.
That's a good one, Hunter. What's yours?
I was doing the pop up ads.
Out of everything on the planet of Earth that you could uninvent, pop up.
Well,
ads
then
is one of them.
Once my mom said spam calls, I think I'd.
Not like COVID or diseases or something that we manufacture.
I know,
like
it
Chimera
sounds so. It sounds so silly, but it's such an annoyance in everyday life.
Oh. Yeah.
And quarantine was actually pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, okay. There's
it
that. But I'm talking about the disease itself.
Yeah.
I mean, we manufacture stuff just so we can learn how to beat it. That sometimes
Yeah. Who thought of that?
That's weird, isn't it?
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a deep dive right there. All right. Well, that's a good question. All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for
having
me.
I'd like to introduce you to our team and kind of into our world. And to do that, we usually back up a little bit, get into your backstory about where you came from. So where were you born?
I was born, I hate to say it because I got to Texas as quick as I could, but I was born in Kankakee, Illinois. The only thing I can say there is that the Yankees won the war. So, but that's it.
They
I had
did.
No contribution to that.
They remind us all the time
I know.
About it too.
But when I was 2, we moved to Georgia, which is, you know, kind of the childhood I remember. And we lived there till I was 14. And then my parents divorced and we moved to Texas and have been in Texas ever since.
Where in Georgia?
In Atlanta, the Atlanta area.
Yeah, proper, right, check.
Yeah.
That place has grown.
It's crazy. It's
I mean, Atlanta,
totally,
Buckhead, the whole...
Yes, it's totally changed. And we were in South Atlanta. So, like, I always, when I go back, I was 14 when we left, so I wasn't driving. But, like, all my friends that still live there, they all think I just know where everything is because, you know, I grew up there. But I'm like, if you don't drive, you kind of don't have a sense of anything. And then it's changed so much. So, yeah, it's been crazy.
Any siblings?
I am the oldest of 6. So we have 4 from my mom and dad, and then 2 from my mom and my stepdad. And, you know, that's a crazy story that I'm sure we're going to all get into. But my mom and dad were married until I was almost 14. And then my stepmom married my dad like 3 months after my mom and dad divorced. And she used to be married to my stepdad.
Wait,
so,
what?
I know. It's hard to keep up with. Okay, so my dad...
This is going to be one of those. Go ahead.
My dad, when I was born, he was a pastor. So that's all I know. I was like born in the baptistry, right? So growing up, I was always at church. Everything that we did was at the church. It was like my second home. But we were in a very strict, it's the denomination is Baptist, but it's the independent fundamental Baptist side of the Baptist. So like no wearing shorts, no wearing pants, girls couldn't wear shirts with writing on them, no mixed swimming, which is swimming with, you know, boys and girls together, could not go to a movie in the theater at all because they used that money to make porn movies. This is all stuff that I grew up believing. I mean, really believing. No alcohol, none. No alcohol, drinking, drugs, and anything sexual is a one-way ticket to hell. Like, just end of story. So I was in this until my parents got divorced, which was shocking for me because that was like the ultimate sin. Like, how, like, I'm not allowed to wear pants, but y'all can get divorced. Like, what's going on here, right? And so when we moved to Texas, I was pretty shocked to find out that not only were my parents getting divorced, but this other couple in our church was also getting divorced. And my dad was marrying her and my mom was marrying him. So they just like swap partners. Yeah. But I'm still not allowed to wear pants. I just want to go on record as I'm still in my culottes, right?
Was that other couple like involved with your family?
Yes. Okay. So we had like the compound, you know, we had the church and my dad started a school and we had a gym. So like everything that I did that in my life was on this campus. And so she was a teacher in our elementary school. He was my eighth grade homeroom teacher, my softball coach, my volleyball coach. So yeah, it was like one big, huge family. And you know, everybody, if you worked for my dad, you had to go to the church. It was just a non-negotiable. And, he actually had a contract that people had to sign when they came to work for him or volunteer with him that I found years and years later that I couldn't believe like grown adults would actually sign, because it was basically contractually agreeing to your allegiance being to him, not to God, not to the Bible, but to him, and supporting the church with 10% of your paycheck. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think if you worked there, it was like just taken out
of
your
check. Anyways.
Yeah. I mean, it was very cultish. Was it a cult? I don't know. I mean, lots of people say it is, and I've never studied cults, but it seemed very cultish like. So I know if my dad said to drink the Kool-Aid, because this is what God's telling us, they would have drunk the Kool-Aid. So maybe it was, but
that sounds like a cult.
That is insane.
It is crazy. As a grown adult, for me now looking back, it's crazy.
Is your dad still alive?
I believe so. Yeah. I haven't had a relationship with him in a long time, which I'll get into. But yeah, I think when my dad got started, I think he had really good intentions. I believe that he felt he was called by the Lord to be a pastor. And I think that's how he started. I think he really loved people and he wanted to do the right thing. The way that they were trained. Okay, so Jack Hiles is like who he sat under his whole life as his pastor. And Jack Hiles had preacher boy school. So all these kids that went through this school were all taught the same thing. And one of the worst things that they were taught was never admit when you're wrong. Because if you admit that you are wrong, then they will look at you as weak and you cannot be a leader. So, which is completely unbiblical, you know, it's just not at all what's modeled in the Bible. But so my dad became very narcissistic. He did not preach from the pulpit, worship me, you know, not God, but it is how it came across. In fact, he definitely believed in corporal punishment, and we had this big Six Flags paddle, you know, Six Flags over Texas. Uh-huh. Well, we had a Six Flags over Georgia, and it really took the fun out of going to Six Flags for me, because every year we would get a new paddle, and this thing was like, it was crazy, and it had carvings in it. So when you would get smacked upside the butt, like, you could feel it. Like, it was really bad, and there were times that being the oldest kid, I provided the most sermon examples. So I was constantly, if I got in trouble, it was in the next sermon. Like, my dad used everything that I did as this is how to discipline your kids or whatever. But our corporal punishment was, today would be child abuse. You could not do that to a child today. And I remember one time, I don't even know what I did, but whatever it was really made him mad. And I stopped counting my licks when I got to 100.
Oh,
and it
gosh.
Was so, it w- I couldn't breathe because of, I, my nose was running. I was horribly crying. I mean, I was really having a hard time just breathing. So he didn't seem like he was ready to stop. So I simply just asked him if I could take a bathroom break. And and I had done this before, I'd never gotten to 100 licks, but when I'd go to the bathroom, I would always look at my rear end and it was like beaming red, right? This time it was like already turning purple. Like he had like done some damage. And I thought, I don't know if he's going to stop. So I'm going to stay in here and just kind of like give him time to cool off. Like maybe when I go back out, he'll calm down a little bit. And so like 5 minutes later or so, you know, I wiped my face off and went back out. And when I got out, he just was still like as mad as he was before. And he was mad, you know, like he was, this was not like loving discipline. And I remember when he started spanking me again, I said, "Why are you doing this?" And he said, "Because I'm going to break your will." And there was something in that statement that changed me. It was like, okay, that is never going to happen. Like, you are not breaking my will. Like, I don't know why. It was like, it just toughened me up. And, you know, I just endured to the end and, you know, just tried not to make him mad. But the harder part of all of that was this was all going on while he was molesting me. So during all of the rules and regulations of, you know, no drinking, no smoking, which was fine, but no going to the movies, no swimming with boys, all of these things were to protect me and to keep me in God's good graces. But yet at home, he was molesting me. And I couldn't put that into words. Like, I didn't know that word, molested. I didn't know. We were never taught words like, anything sexual. We weren't allowed to even know about that because the school that he started, he decided what each of us were going to know. Like the curriculum, all of that had to be cleared through him. So there was no sex education, health class, none of that. So I could not have put that into words. And even if I could have, it would have been hard for me to put dad and bad in the same sentence because of how he taught us. Like, he came across like there's God and then there's him, right? And so I knew something was wrong with me because that's the only thing that would explain what's happening to me. And I didn't believe this happened to anybody else. So I didn't tell anybody because also my dad said if anybody found out that my mom would leave and it would break up our family, which for me was the most important thing.
Let's talk life for a second. There's a lot of people out there with life insurance, but they have no idea if they're paying too much or if they're even being covered the right way. And if your policy is going through your job, you could lose that coverage overnight. That's why I'm going through SelectQuote. For over 40 years, they've helped millions of Americans find the right life insurance for their life and their budget. Their licensed agents work for you, not the insurance companies. And in as little as 15 minutes, they compare policies from top-rated carriers at no cost to you. Even better, no medical exam options are available, and they work with people who have pre-existing conditions. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save money more than 50% at selectquote.com/TNQ. That is selectquote.com/TNQ to save more than 50% at SelectQuote.
How old were you when this started?
Ironically, for my entire life until last April, I would have answered that question and told you I was 11 years old when the abuse started. Because I had no memories before 11. And I've even been to EMDR. I went to EMDR for a year and a half for 3 hours a week trying to recall memories from before 11. And they could not penetrate, get any memories to come back. But when I went and did Ibogaine in April, it all came back. And so technically, I now have to answer that my abuse started at 3. Mm. So
sounds like grade one piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really interesting. Okay. Let me also say I have 5 abusers. 5. Okay. My dad was the most significant because of who he was in my life. Every abuser that that abused me, obviously it's all abuse, right? But I did not have the relationships with these other people that I did with my father, and I idolized him and I loved him and I still love him. But the interesting thing is I never struggled ever with forgiving him. It just was so natural. I mean, I don't know if it's a father-daughter thing, if it's just how I saw him, but when my stepfather started molesting me, oh my goodness, this is where God taught me what forgiveness actually is, because I fantasized about setting him on fire in a cornfield. And it had to be a cornfield because I didn't want that whole stop, drop, and roll thing to work. I wanted him to suffer like I had suffered. So, it was bad. It was not a good place to be in my mind. And the Lord had to really work with me to get me to understand that that feeling that I had towards him wasn't hurting him. It was hurting me. And
did
so
your mom know?
Yes, at the end, not during it. She did not know during it. And she so didn't know with my father that, now I thought it's why they got divorced, right? My dad said, if your mother finds out, she will leave. Well, then she left when I was 14, almost 14. So I knew it was my fault. I mean, there's no other explanation for why my parents are getting divorced and I'm still in culottes, right? I mean, there's no other explanation. So this is my fault too. So when we got, my dad moved us all to Texas, you know, she went and, you know, got remarried to this other man. And when my dad presented that he was going to marry my stepmother, I was like, absolutely not. Like, this was not something I was for. She had pretended to be my friend when we lived in Georgia. So I felt betrayed. Like, she had gotten close to me to get to my father. And I wasn't for it. Well, at the time there was four kids, and the way my dad looked at it was, well, I have three other children that need a mother. But instead of giving us all time to work through this, okay, we drove off the parking lot of our church that we had all grown up at on January 2nd of 1984. And my dad remarried in May. My mom remarried in March. So if that tells you how quickly it was, right? Not, I mean, clearly this had been going on for a while, but it was all brand new to us. So we had no time to process it. And I'm being molested and I'm being ripped out of, you know, this entire life I've ever known. So it was a little bit much to be asking of me at 14. But when he saw that I wasn't just going to comply with her being now the mom, he kicked me out to live with my mom and my stepdad, who he had allowed me to believe did not want me. So, yeah, it was a lot. It was a whole lot. And so, after my stepdad molested me, and by the time I was 18 years old, my moral compass was just not there. You know, I felt like a piece of meat, felt like every guy that, you know, tried to get near me, just wanted one thing. And of course, if I wanted love, then this is what you have to do. And so I ended up in a topless bar for almost 2 years, trying to get back control over my body, my sexuality. Like, that had been stolen from me. At the time, I didn't realize, but for my whole life, it had been stolen from me. So interestingly enough, I never tasted alcohol, never puffed on a cigarette, and never did drugs. Looking back, I'm not quite sure how I did that, because it's not something I think anybody can really do in a sober state of mind. But I was so determined to get control back, and that's what kept me there. Because when I was on stage, the bouncers in that club, I mean, they didn't let anybody mess with us. And it was a feeling of safety. It was so bizarre, because I felt safer on stage than I ever did at home. So I didn't want to leave, right? I felt very safe there. And I remember having people at the table, because I'm only 18 at the time. So, you know, legally I can't even drink, but I'd be sitting around with a group of guys and they all have wedding rings on. And so I would say, does your wife know you're here? You know, it's just like, a little preacherette, you know. It's just like, I don't think she would like that, because it really made me mad that they were, cheating in this way. So anyway, at the end of my almost 2 years, I was getting ready one day for going to work, and I started just having some cramps, and so I ran to the bathroom. I was in my little apartment gym by myself, so I just ran into the bathroom thinking, I just need to go to the bathroom and then go get ready, and it didn't go well. I just kept, hurting more and hurting more, and I've had babies, so I, that's a horrible pain. This was way worse than that. I don't know what was happening, except for I know what God was doing in hindsight, but the pain was so bad that, when you're dancing, you're not praying, you're not having your daily devotions, you're not in communion with God. But when you're dying, all of a sudden, you reach out to the Lord. So after about 20 minutes of this just horrible pain, I finally just said a prayer, and I'm like, Lord, I know you're trying to kill me, and I know I deserve it. Can you please just have mercy and do it quickly? That's all I was asking for. Not take it away, just kill me quickly. And then the pain got worse. I was like, oh, I've really made him mad now. And this is how I saw God. I saw God through the eyes of my father, a very scary, rule-oriented, ready to smite me at any time. So after 40, 45 minutes of this, I had kept praying, and it just kept getting worse. So I said the only thing I knew to say was, if you will make this pain stop, I promise I will never dance again. In 60 seconds, it was gone. It was just gone. And I knew right then, I knew that it was him. I knew he heard me. And I knew that I had just made a vow, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to keep it, because it's all I knew and it was where I felt safe. But I also had enough fear of the Lord, healthy fear of the Lord, that I didn't want to disappoint him. So I took my little bag of stuff and I took it out to the dumpster right then and there, and stood there for a few minutes, knowing if I threw it in, I wasn't going to go after it, and that would be the end of my dancing. And I just said, Lord, I'm going to trust you. And I threw it in the dumpster. And from that point on, he just started wooing me back to him, through a relationship with him, not through a man behind a pulpit. And that's really what started me learning to hear from the Lord myself, not be told what I should believe or be told, this is what God says about you. And so it's been a crazy journey, because I was almost 21 at that point. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I can now go in, and we have several topless clubs that I've been able to go in and share my testimony with these girls, because the number one thing they want to know is, how did you get out? No girl wakes up and decides this is what they want to do with their life. They always find themselves in a position where they need to do this for money, for some reason, or because they just have no self-esteem and they don't think they're worth anything more than that. But no one aspires to do that, as they grow up. And so I just have a special love for them that, and then when you look at Jesus, look how he was with the prostitutes and all the outcasts, that's who Jesus came to save. And so I just wish people could see it through a lens of compassion, not wanting them to have to have gone through it, but to understand it in a little bit better way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. That's crazy that you went through that. Did you stay in touch with your parents at all, your mom or your dad?
Yeah, I'm very close with my mom. She actually lives not far from me.
She's still with that guy?
He passed away. Yeah. And you know what?
Badly?
Say it again.
Badly, I hope.
He had a stroke, and we found him in the garage. We don't know how long he had been out there. Interestingly enough, when I went and told her about what he was doing, because I didn't want it to go on like it did with my dad. So probably about 6 months in, I couldn't take it anymore. So I went and told my mom, and she confronted him, and he was very repentant to me. And he stopped what he was doing to me. And I, even though it was a much shorter period of time and it was not as intense as it was with my father, that hatred was so much worse for him. But God used that for me to work me through what forgiveness is, because when I go speak at women's conferences or anything like that, inevitably somebody's walking forward to get help, to talk about it. A lot of people don't talk about it. It's like a taboo thing. They feel the shame of it, like it's somehow a reflection of them. And that's the one thing I feel like God's broken off of me. This isn't not anything I deserved or caused to happen. And that's what I want every victim to know. That is not your fault. But when I'm dealing with someone at an altar, they are either in one of two categories. They love their perpetrator because it's somebody like a father that they just want them to love them back. Or it's somebody that they are like planning their death, right? So I feel like God has given me an ability to be able to talk in either scenario, where if I would not have had both experiences, I wouldn't maybe be able to relate to the one who's trying to, you know, plan their death in the cornfield, right? Because it was just easy for me to forgive my dad. It was so, so different. And, you know, I see my girls now with my husband, and it is such a different dynamic than it is with like me and them or my boys and me. And so I just think there's such a special bond between a dad and the daughter that like that's what a lot of what made it easier for me. So, and God's grace, clearly.
So did you ever tell your dad you forgave him?
Oh, multiple times. Yeah. We've talked about it so much. You know, I had a lot of hope that my dad would just do the right thing. But the first part, when we first confronted him about it, the two younger siblings, he did not want them to know. Like, and I said, well, I'm not going to tell them, but Dad, you probably need to tell them because this kind of stuff doesn't stay a secret forever. And it's better for you while you're alive to be able to answer these questions than it would be for you to die, then they find out, now they can't even discuss this with you, you know? But he's like, I will go to my grave before I tell them. I am not going to do that. And I said, well, you know, you don't have anything to worry. I'm not telling them. You know, I didn't feel like it was my place. My stepmother knew what he did. And I told her, as long as you know that this is what he's capable of, you are responsible for the other kids in the house. Because that was my bigger fear. Something would happen to one of them. So once I knew she knew, then I was fine with it. But my whole relationship with him was trying to get him to love me, just like he loved the other five kids. And he could not bring himself to that because I was a reminder of his sin. And I look a lot like my mom, and that wasn't a good situation with their divorce. So just all around, it was hard for him to be around me. Not fair, not the way I would have wanted it, but the thing that I love about God, because, and I definitely want to get to this, because when your father, when your earthly father, who God put in your life to be your protector and give you the security, especially a little girl, the security that you need and how you see yourself. When that relationship is fractured like mine was, you have such a warped view of who God is and who you think you are in his eyes, right? So I used to separate God and Jesus. I saw God through the scary lens of my dad, and I saw Jesus through the lens of my brother, who was always my protector and who walked with me from the second I told him. I didn't think he would believe me, but he did, and saved my life because I wasn't going to be here anymore. This was like, you know, 30 something years ago.
Nobody likes feeling stuck in debt. It's stressful, and it feels like you're just working hard without actually getting ahead. And that's why Navy Federal Credit Union is here to help their members take control with a Platinum Card. When you transfer your credit card balance within your first 60 days, you get a 0% intro APR for 12 months. That's breathing room that makes a huge difference. It means more of your payment goes towards progress, less towards interest, and less stress hanging over your head month to month. A lot of the members are out there saving thousands of dollars over promo period and using that time to reset, pay things down faster, and finally feel like they're getting back in control of their finances instead of reacting to them. If debt's been holding you back, This is a very smart step forward. Go find out how NavyFederal.org/platinum can help you out. Navy Federal Credit Union, our members are the mission. Navy Federal Credit Union is federally insured by the NCUA.
When he believed me and he walked with me through it, that's kind of how I saw Jesus. And I used to say, I think Jesus is up there next to God, continuously saying to him, hey, give me some more time. I'm working with her. She's just a tough one. You know, I'll get her, you know, because I couldn't see God in the loving capacity that he was. And I think that the Lord allowed me to have that feeling so that when Jesus reintroduced me to God, I now see him through Jesus's eyes. And that happened in my IBGAN experience. And that is why I'm so passionate about this movement, because he didn't just save my physical life. I needed a lot of healing. I had a TBI. I had complex PTSD. Nothing was working. No amount of counseling, no amount of EMDR, no medicine. I've had everything done, spent over $100,000, and not even some other psychedelic assisted treatments that I had had. Nothing was working. And when I decided to try Ibogaine as a last resort, I mean, it was so profoundly God's presence that no one can ever take it away from me. I said, I will forget my children's names before I forget this experience, because he literally came and rescued me and reintroduced me to the Father, my real Father, who's never hurt me and never abandoned me. And that is the healing that I needed more than any healing, more than the TBI, more than the complex PTSD, more than any of it, was knowing who I am to my actual, real Heavenly Father.
Yeah, that's what Ibogaine does. It's hard to explain that to people.
When was this? When did you go through?
April of last year.
Okay.
Yeah, April 8th. It's like my new birthday.
So you're kind of rolling through the honeymoon phase and then a little bit after.
I am. Yeah. I know. I am.
It gets better.
Does it?
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, every day.
Yeah. It is an amazing, I say, I don't know where the iboga shrub tree, whatever it is, came from, but I think it was when the cherubim were moving the tree of life out of the Garden of Eden, a piece of fruit fell off somewhere in Africa.
I've heard people say that before.
Yeah. I think that's got to be, because it gives you your life back is what it does. And I don't know. I'm so grateful to God for giving us this medicine. And ironically, my dad taught, you know, you remember that commercial, here's your brain, it was an egg, you know, here's your brain, yeah, here's your brain on drugs, you know. So I was scared to death of doing any drug, right? And my dad said, you know, drugs would destroy my brain. So the Lord showed me before I did Ibogaine, which is what gave me the peace about it. He said, Wendy, I'm going to use the very substances that your dad used to scare you to heal the brain that he damaged. And it was just redemption. You know, that's just what God is about, is redemption. And that's exactly what he did. It's exactly what he did.
So was your Ibogaine experience scary in itself?
The actual experience, the 22-hour journey that I took? No. It was, I would have gone again, like, immediately if they would have let me. In fact, I was hoping somebody would cancel. I could just go in their place. I had the most amazing 22 hours that I've ever been. I don't stay awake that long. You know, I'm kind of old. And so like I go to bed at 8:30-ish, and just through the whole night, I was overwhelmed. And my experience was very orderly. It was very much, he would show me a scene. So that was like the information. Then he would give me insight into what I was seeing. Because the scene itself didn't always make sense. Sometimes I recognized somebody, but other times there were people there I didn't even know who they were. But then he would give me insight into that scene. Then he would give me instruction. So it was information, insight, instruction over and over and over.
Yeah, it's repetitive.
Yeah, and one of the things, and this is what I say, one of the things he told me, I went to Beyond in Cancun, and when I got there, the first 5 days, I was not easy to be around. I thought I had been tricked into going. I did not want to stay. And so Tom and I had many, many conversations just to try to keep me there because he knew what I was going to experience. So in the middle of my journey, God told me to apologize to Tom. So, you know, I'm thinking most people that think, especially Christians, they have the stigma about psychedelics, right? Like, at what point is it not a good thing that God tells you to apologize to someone and that you are capable in the moment? Like, he stopped my journey until I apologized to Tom. Like, he meant right then and there. So I stopped everything I was doing, took my headphones off, took my eye mask off, asked for Tom. 20 minutes later, Tom comes over. I apologized to Tom. We had a fabulous, wonderful conversation. He hugged me. I hugged him, put my eye mask and my headphones back on. All the journey started again. How does that happen if it's just like this thing that's making you out of your mind? I mean, that is a conscious decision to be obedient to something God's telling you to do, and that's a fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah, people ask me about that all the time. I never did acid or LSD or anything like that, but yeah, a lot either. Of people are afraid when you get in there, it takes you, right?
Right.
I'm like, hey, with this, you're actually laying there, and I mean, you can be deep into the movie.
Yes.
I mean, it's a living, breathing kind of moment. It's hard to explain. Like, people here who haven't been through past the curtain, they don't understand what that means. But you can literally tap them on the shoulder and you raise your mask, be like, what's up?
Yes.
And have a conversation and then immediately lay your mask back down and go right back into it. So you're still, you're present, and it's not a drug.
It's not a drug.
Medicine.
I really wish people would stop calling it a drug. And I think that's one of the worst stigmas that ever started, even looping it in with calling it a psychedelic, because it's not like the traditional psychedelics of the 60s that people imagine. This is a medicine, and it needs to be treated like a medical procedure.
Absolutely.
And to call it a drug or anything like that just seems so opposite of the whole goal. That it's one of my biggest pet peeves when I hear, even when we do legislation work and even people from our own camp that use the word drug, I'm like, stop using that word. That is not what this is. No one would do this for a euphoria.
No.
This is not a, this isn't a fun.
No.
Thing or to even, you know, some people do drugs to numb their brain. That's not what this is.
No, you can't escape.
Yes.
What it's trying to show you, unless, like you said, you take your mask off and refuse to engage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the things,
on the television, man, and the news, the freaking news, it's supposed to report facts.
Right.
Well, advertise drugs that make you rectal bleed out of your nose.
Yeah.
And then it's like some of the side effects we won't even put on here.
Exactly.
And that is nonstop. Matter of fact, they have dance routines and music that goes with it.
Jingles to
sell it to you. Nonstop. The news.
Don't you love how every single one of the drug commercials, it's always people living this like Leave It to Beaver life.
Yeah.
While they're putting in the fine print, you know, it may cause you to bleed. It'll kill you.
You can't believe what it'll do to you. The side effects, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. Yeah, and I mean, fine print and little bitty.
I'd rather have the disease than all of that stuff.
Well, and
right?
You have to take it every single day.
Right.
And that's why I tell people with Ibogaine.
That's not how Ibogaine works.
There's never going to be a point where anyone takes Ibogaine every day. That's not
if they're in their right mind. Yeah. No.
Even if you have a blessed journey like you did.
Yeah.
And I know people who have.
Right.
And I mean, it's not, I don't do the ego with the envy thing anymore, but I'm like, wow, good for you, sister.
I know.
Because some
I was
of us
with,
don't.
I know. I was with some people that did it
don't,
too, which
right?
has made it scarier.
It still gets the point across.
It does.
You can learn either way. I'm a hard learner, right?
So yeah. I have blonde hair. It had to be easy.
Yeah, I had to go my route. And I get that. And he makes that clear while you're in there. And I don't think I would have wanted it any other way.
Right. Yeah.
When you're in the moment, you're like, oh.
He gave you exactly what he knew
what
you
needed.
Yeah.
How I was designed.
Yes.
And the whole thing. Because once you get it in you, that pill inside of you, like, your body knows.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, I know exactly what this is.
Yep.
And if it gets into that DNA and traces back to the beginning, where you're just kind of like, and I was reading Revelations about the tree of healing, the kind of deal, and I've heard people relate it to that,
mm-hmm.
healing of the nations.
Yeah, Revelation 22, too.
22, yeah. So when you talk about that, because when you come out of there, you just know.
You absolutely know.
I mean, I had all that in me when I laid down here, and the next morning I woke up, it was gone.
It is so miraculous. There is no other word for it. It is a divinely created, intelligent medicine.
Absolutely intelligent.
And in my book, every single place that I use the word psychedelic, there's a slash plant medicine. Because exactly what you said, the stigma mm-hmm. behind the word, by the end of my book, you have seen psychedelic slash plant medicine. Because does it have psychedelic effects? For some people,
yeah.
It does. Not for everyone. There are people that have gone through without the visuals. How do you explain that? It does not change what it is doing for your neuropathways and all of the things that are physically beneficial for you. But I have to say, for me, it was so important. Again, my healing, the biggest healing I needed was my spiritual healing between me and my father, my actual heavenly father that had been ruptured by my earthly dad. And had I not gotten any help with the TBI, the complex PT, I mean, I came home and never saw my EMDR therapist again. Like, how do you go from literal 3 hours a week EMDR and counseling before that my whole life, since I was 18? How do you go from having that weekly dependence on somebody to knowing who you are to a place where you don't need that anymore? That is not because I'm Superwoman. That is because God met me and gave me what I needed in that moment.
Hell yeah, you are Superwoman, because it takes all that stuff you went through and turns into a superpower.
It is a superpower.
I mean, you realize, like, that was a gauntlet, a test.
Yes.
A crucible. Some people are born into that.
Yeah.
And they don't make it out of there.
Right.
And you could go your whole life without ever knowing that.
Yeah.
But this kind of shows you quick.
Yeah. And I was told early on in my spiritual walk with the Lord that because I didn't understand about curses, and generational things, because I've asked my father, did something happen to you? I was trying to understand, what would make him cross the line with me. I did not understand. And he didn't tell me, I don't know if it's a protection thing. He doesn't want me to know that about my grandparents. But something has happened in our family, and I don't think it started with my father. So I know that if that is true, I can't prove that, but if that is true, I know that the person that God picks to cut the generational curse, it is a very heavy mantle. And so I've known that going in. And then, of course, when you're in ministry, I think anytime you're working for the Lord, you've got a big target on your back for, whatever the enemy is going to try to stop you. And, he almost won. In 2022, I literally was planning my suicide. I couldn't do it anymore. I did not know. I knew I was living in hell here. And I had convinced myself that my family, my husband, and my close friends, I was such a burden to them that it was really an act of love to not be here anymore. And unfortunately, there was a girl that was, what was her name? Something Christ. She worked for one of the news magazines, like Extra, and she had just won like Miss USA or Miss America. I mean, she's a beautiful, beautiful girl. And she lived on the ninth floor of a building and went up to the 19th floor and took a nosedive and killed herself like the week before I was planning. So I felt like it was a sign. Yes, this is what I'm supposed to do. And so I literally got all the way to the night before I was going to take my life on the next day. And again, like when you're dancing, you're planning your suicide, you're not really talking to God. But I threw up this last minute flippant, I say it wasn't sacrilegious, but it was dang near close, flippant prayer. And basically, like, if you are up there and you have any clue what's going on down here and you don't want me to do this, you're going to have to fix it. That's exactly what I said. Now, if I were God, that would have been the lightning bolt right then and there. But I just went to bed not expecting anything, because I had this thing that had attached itself to me. I think it probably was a demon. I don't think it had possessed me. I don't think we can be possessed as Christians because the Holy Spirit lives in us, but I'm not 100% sure on that, but I felt it. A very heavy spirit, and I couldn't get rid of it. And it was like the only answer I had. So the next morning I woke up after saying that flippant prayer and got all the way to the bathroom and realized this thing hadn't found me yet, you know? So I was like so happy. And then I was like, well, it'll find me by the time I get to the coffee maker. Well, it didn't. And then it didn't find me an hour later, and then an hour later. And I'm like, oh my goodness, did he hear me? You know, did he listen to that prayer?
When I'm hydrated, everything just works better. My energy, focus, mood, all of it. And that's why I love using Drip Drop, because it's not just about thirst, it's about keeping your body and your mind running at full power. Drip Drop was developed by a doctor, and it gives you 3 times the electrolytes and half the sugars of other leading sports drinks. The formula absorbs fast, so you feel it right away. That's better focus, more energy, and no crash. It's trusted by firefighters, medical pros, and over 90% of the top college and pro teams because it just flat out works. And it tastes so great. My favorite is definitely the lemon flavor. It's clean, it's not too sweet, and it's easy to mix into my day, whether I'm traveling, working out, or recording the show. So right now, Drip Drop is offering our listeners 20% off of your first order. Go to dripdrop.com and use the promo code TNQ. That is dripdrop.com with the promo code TNQ, and you'll get that 20% off. Stay sharp, stay hydrated, and get your Drip Drop.
It's always these crazy situations, you know, one on the toilet begging for my life, and then, you know, getting me to the place of making a vow that I will never do this thing again. And then him using that very thing to help rescue other girls. And then getting me all the way to literally going to end my life, thinking I'm doing a great thing for my family, and saying another flippant prayer. And then he just is right there, you know? And people, we make it so complicated as Christians to even communicate with God. You know, like I don't hear him. I mean, he's constantly talking to us. But I think sometimes we are so busy with social media and the things that we all want to, you know, not invent anymore, that we can't hear him. And so I remember leaving Beyond after having such a profound visitation by him and just thinking, I never want this feeling to ever go away. I'll never, ever want to lose this feeling. And thinking, okay, I need to come back here every year just for a tune-up or something. Like, I don't ever want it to go away because it changed everything for me.
It won't let you.
Huh?
It won't let you go back if it doesn't want you back.
Yeah.
If it does, it'll call you. You'll feel it. You'll know it.
Right, right.
Leading up to the point where you wanted to end your life, were you praying daily?
I was running a ministry.
You were running a ministry.
I had been running a ministry since 2010 and raising money for kids in Africa that couldn't eat, and local kids wherever I was raising money, we would raise money for, but we called it a global mission, like for global and local, for all the kids that, you know, were starving or couldn't eat. And then that turned into, after about 3 years of doing that, the Lord had me open a home for unwed, pregnant, sex trafficked teenage girls, because all of those girls were like me, other than I was never trafficked, but they were all broken from broken homes.
But even though you were running a ministry, were you having a conversation with God every day?
I wouldn't say every day, but I was definitely communicating with him and more aware of him than what the kicker, what did it for me was when COVID hit, the ministry closed down for not because COVID hit, but because there were so many different, when you're working with sex trafficked teenage girls, you would think that would be really hard. the girls were the easy part of the ministry. The hardest part of the ministry were the Christian volunteers that were trying to sabotage what I was doing. And it got to the place where I wanted to work with atheists more than I wanted to work with Christians, because I'm like, they don't know any different. If they backstab me, if they do something, you can't expect anything more from them, right? It was so disheartening. And since then, what I have learned is that just because someone uses the word Christian does not mean they're worshiping the same God you and I are worshiping. So for instance, when I met with Governor Perry about a month ago, I had to ask him about his salvation experience. I wanted to hear it from his own lips. I wanted to know, who is the God that you worship? And what I love about Governor Perry is he's not shy about it at all. Mm-mm. And he went on for 20 minutes. I was expecting like maybe 3 to 5 minutes on a good day. 20 minutes he went on about how Jesus affected him and how his mom had such a role in his life and all the stupid stuff that led him back to Jesus and everything. And
he's a great human being.
He is amazing. And I love the fact that when I asked him the question, we were in the room with just my husband and I and him, and then we had another meeting coming in right afterwards. And so when those people started pouring into the room, I thought, well, he's probably going to wrap it up, you know, because we're talking about something personal. He just kept on going.
Well,
and he did not care.
You don't care.
And, you know, you got the people that are trying to keep him on schedule, like looking at their watch. He's just like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you taking medicine? Like, no, I've got something to say. And I loved it, because that's the reason that we were all even in that room, is because of what Jesus did in his life. And that is what makes him so passionate about helping people in doing what we're doing now. And mm-hmm. I love it. And but in this world that we're involved in, it's not always, when they say God, it's not always the same God that I worship. So, which is fine. I think God can only be found as he is drawing people to him. The Bible's very clear. When God draws you, you will come, and Jesus will not lose you, period, end of story. So I'm thankful that I'm in this world where I can talk about it, because not all drug-related spaces would allow somebody to talk about Jesus, right? For me, that is the reason that I think that he has me here. Because I think everybody is searching. I think I was searching. I think everybody is trying to figure out who we are, why these things have happened. And I know for a fact that Jesus is the only answer. Iboga is the tool that he used in my life. For some people, it might be psilocybin. For some people, you know, he may just miraculously heal them. That's great. But Jesus heals in many, many ways. When he came to the earth, some of the blind people, he put mud on their eyes and spit in it and all of that. Others, he just said, you're healed. So why would he have done that if he only had one way of healing? He is showing us that he is God and he can do it however he wants to. And if we make ourselves open and available to him, which is what my journey through Ibogaine was, it was just literal a step of faith, because the other heart protocol I was doing was not helping me. And that was also psychedelic assisted therapy. And it was scary for me to do something even more powerful. But I saw him open the doors and I knew he was in it. Now, I didn't know how much he was in it. I did not know he was going to give me that spiritual healing. But that has been the literal thing that saved my life. And I don't want to not be here anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a mind, body, and spirit. Because it cures your body, too.
It does.
Regrows your brain matter, defrags your system while you're laying there. And then it goes to work on everything else, your mind and your spirit.
Right.
But there are risks with it. And that's why Americans for Ibogaine is so big on, like, making sure that it does go through FDA trials.
Protocols.
Has
procedures.
To go through medical protocols. There's a whole gambit of things that we still need to learn about this medicine.
You.
It can kill you.
And it has a couple of people.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it has. But the thing that I say is, for the very few deaths that have been involved with Ibogaine, it pales in comparison to the number of deaths that people that try to go to regular rehab or that don't go to rehab at all and just die of a drug overdose, all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is still such a hopeful medication, and for a lot of people, once and done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that once and done phraseology kind of made me a little bit nervous, especially with the mindset I had going into Ibogaine, because I thought if it doesn't work for me, then I'm going to be done, right? Like if one time is supposed to do it. So I'm a little bit hesitant in using that, also because I went through with several addicts, and did it cure their opioids or their fentanyl? Absolutely. But what is the reason that they got on drugs to begin with? Usually depression, anxiety, something like that, or a trauma they were trying to mask. So once that opioid or fentanyl or whatever addiction is gone, that stuff creeps back in.
Yeah, peer pressure is the biggest one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. And then they might need to go back for round two to deal with that.
Yeah,
because okay. So that's why I don't ever want someone.
Well, people say it backwards. It's like, hey, man, this it's worked like one time on
right.
people, like a lot, actually.
Yeah.
But it's a max of three. Most people don't have to go past that. Three times in three years. It's, you don't go back.
Okay.
And, but you did it four.
Or two.
Right.
I went in for my fourth dose.
Yeah.
Just to find out if what it said to me on the third one was legit.
Really?
And when I got in, I locked in on my fourth dose. I had my earbuds in. And
yeah.
I was downloading the Gospels. James Earl Jones was reading me the Bible.
Oh, how cool.
And I freaking laid down. And as soon as I locked in, it graduated me and then released me. And I just laid there. Like, it stopped. It goes, you're done. I'm done with you.
No way.
And turn me loose. How about that? What kind of drug you know can do that?
What?
Not only does it tell you it's going to release you, it freaking released me.
So you just laid there?
I just laid there. Listen to the Gospels.
Unbelievable.
How about that?
So it all just stops working.
Just stopped
right
working
then
right there. I mean, how it locks you down? Like, locks me down.
Yeah, yeah.
So much so where I never would move a toe.
Yeah.
Or a finger.
I couldn't. Yeah.
Because if I tried, it would be like, didn't I tell you to lay still? I was like, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
I'm sorry. Uh-huh. You know, people have never done this. They're like, what are you talking about?
What
right?
in the world but, are they? Yeah.
How about that? So my third one. You know, because I found the Lord, I found my purpose. It shows you that too.
Yeah.
I went back in, I was dealing with some aggression issues and whatnot. It settled that pretty quick because he's tougher than I am.
Yes.
A lot tougher than I am, you know. And it's almost like the Lord's teacher.
Yes.
Is who it put on me. Like, yeah. I tell people who are movie buffs, it's like I went in there looking for Mr. Miyagi and Pai Mei from Kill Bill found me. And like, when I saw him in there, I was like, uh-oh. And it freaking went to work on me. And
well, you're kind of tough yourself. So you need a little extra.
I completely deserve it. I learned that way.
You need
a little extra. If I had to pick a teacher, it would be that one.
I mean, you had lots of people trying to kill you overseas.
All the time.
You weren't going down.
Whole life, people have always tried to kill me, talk down to me. It's a thing.
So, you 100% deserved it.
Yeah, I deserved it. I deserved it. And when I got out of there, though, I had earned it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I never looked back.
And one can take that away from you. That's what
I say. It's one of those going through that, man. Like, when people tell me that they've been through, I'm like, hey.
I know. It's an immediate connection. You just know
you earned
that
something.
They get it. Yes.
You have earned something.
Absolutely.
And not only that, you've earned my respect. And especially if it gave you a good ride. There's something good about you then,
well,
obviously.
I'll tell you what. I made my husband watch the Fox Ibogaine documentary because I loved the fact that grown, tough men were freaking out the morning of their flood dose. And I was trying to explain to my husband like how scary this was, but I had such this great experience that he was like, I don't think that was so hard for you. And I'm like, no, you have no idea what you're going to get when you go in there.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. And I do think a lot of it is mindset. You know, I was around people the first 3 days it was almost like who was going to one-up me on the worst possible experience and how much they puked and all of this stuff. And so by day four, I'm really afraid. And then I met one man who had a great experience. And I said, okay, I'm only talking to you the rest of the day. And so I went to bed that night.
Get these other suckers away from me.
Yes. I went to bed that night saying, okay, tomorrow's going to be the best day of my life. And then woke up saying, today's going to be the best day of my life. And then I have one of the little people come over that I knew had a bad story. And he's like, how you doing this morning? I said, man, I'm great. I'm so excited about this. He's like, oh, well, what if? And I said, oh. Yeah. Nope. I said, I love you, but not right now. I said, I'm going in with a positive mindset, and this is what's going to happen. I really do think it's such a big deal. And, you know, after my whole experience with Beyond, and because of my Christian beliefs, and I now especially my just renewed faith and being so in love with Jesus, I so want to honor him that I know a lot of Christians, because this happened to me, when they go into some of these environments, the new age part of it is very difficult.
Sure.
And it is not hard to talk yourself out of Ibogaine, because it is a scary thing if all you did was a medicine. If they just came in and gave you the medicine, that alone is scary. But I felt like the Lord was saying, there's a better way to do this that can be completely centered around me, which is all about your mindset. So I have recreated the 22-2 retreat that allows people to go in, and we do everything according to scripture. So we did our very first one in September of last year, and we have a workbook, and there's prayers instead of mantras, and we do like our cleansing ceremony is with like a bowl of water with a little bit of soap in it, and we talk about how instead of being cleansed by the sage, which has no power whatsoever, we're symbolically washing our hands as a cleansing by the blood of Jesus. And that's what we're going in covered by. Because anytime I think you open the door in one of these journeys to the spirit realm, I think you are getting much closer to the action than you are. But the Bible warns us very clearly, even in this world, that the seeing world, you do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities and the darkness of this world, right? So, and then he tells us to put on our armor, okay? And we know greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. So if you have those weapons and those tools going in, when you go into the spirit realm, you're just, again, closer to the action. But if you're not armored up, you may be in for some stuff that you may not be ready for, right? Yeah. And I feel like if Christians could understand that and be in that mindset when they go in, they might have a much better experience than, you know, just randomly or trying to be involved in the prep work or the integration work that doesn't fit in with their faith. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to help with the Christian world, because it's already hard enough for us with the stigma of doing this medication, because we have that psychedelic word in our head, even though it is a plant that God could curse, just like he did the fig tree, and it would never bloom again. But he has not chosen to do that. So why is it still here? Because he knew we would need it.
If you want to look put together without dealing with stiff clothes, ironing, or dry cleaning, that's exactly why I wear Mizzen & Main. They make classic menswear using performance fabrics, and you actually feel the difference immediately. Their shirts and pants are stretchy, lightweight, moisture-wicking, wrinkle-resistant, and they are completely machine-washable, which is huge for me, especially whenever I have those long travel days and I'm just out. They're so comfortable, and what really sold me is that their clothes actually move with you. I can wear them in meetings, record the shows, travel, and even out on the golf course, and I'm feeling super comfortable and also looking professional. And that part matters. Mizzen & Main is a veteran-led organization which supports the military community and gives back to veteran organizations. Right now, you can get 20% off your first purchase at mizzenandmain.com with the promo code TNQ. That's MIZZENANDMAIN.com with promo code TNQ20 for 20% off. Again, that's mizzenandmain.com with TNQ20 as your code.
And so I'm just so thankful that we can do it and have a mindset that is based around listening to the gospels. I mean, what a wonderful way to go. And I did the same thing, but with worship music. You know, I could not listen to that tribal,
that stuff's
whatever
rough.
That I said, shamanic, demonic. I don't know what it is, but I'm not having it in my ears going in.
When that stuff kicks in.
And I was not even on the medicine when I first listened to it. I'm like, if this is a requirement, yeah, I'm out. I cannot do this. So if you have worship music and I have my Bible, I have my little cross, I have my little pillow that said redeemed.
Yeah, I asked that too. I was like, hey, can I make my own playlist like Eye of the Tiger? Something to fire me up and get in here and let's get this on.
Did they let you?
No. That's why I got the gospels and I was like, because they were cool with that.
Okay.
They were cool with that. I was like, hey, this is what I'm doing, man. I'm running with the gospels. And it loaded.
Yes.
So it released me, but I could feel it. Like, you know, you can, when you get the feeling up there, every time one of the gospel chapters would finish, it would load it into my mind.
Oh, my goodness.
And armored up. Like, I didn't know anything about that the day I went in.
Right.
But now I armor up every morning.
Yeah.
I have this whole thing it taught me while I was in there.
Yeah.
I say it every morning. And I mean, armor up from the boots to the belt, to the breastplate, to the helmet, to the shield, to the sword. And then there's this whole thing I say after it before I even make a step out into the in front of somebody or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
Ready to go.
That's so every important. Morning. That's so important.
And
that is so great.
Stayed on me nonstop about doing that.
Wow.
So I speak it, the word of God. I listen to the word of God every morning and I write it.
Oh, that's good.
Before I even see anybody.
Wow. That's really good.
And I remember when people tell you to meditate, I couldn't take a breath for 3 minutes. I couldn't take 10 deep breaths in a row without something popping into my head and catching my attention.
I know.
And it taught me how to do that. Now I go for over an hour.
Do you really?
Every morning.
You're going to have to teach me how to do that.
I had to baby step it. Me up to that.
Okay.
It's like, you got to make this a habit.
Yeah.
And in order to do a habit, say if you were drinking, you would take that first drink and you couldn't get through it.
Yeah.
But eventually you got to 2 to 3.
Yeah.
Whatever, however people form a habit, right?
Right.
And he's like, that's what I'm going to do with you. So I started with one push up every morning and then one breath.
Oh, wow.
And then I would do that for 2 weeks. And then I go to 2 push-ups and 2 breaths. Hey, baby step me.
That is.
Yeah.
But look where you are now.
Well, you build a base.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're not breaking that thing down.
Exactly.
Because it's just in there. Now you don't even think about it.
Yeah, right.
It's like
second
you're on
nature.
Autopilot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I had to learn it that way because nothing else would stick.
That's a way better nature than the sin nature that you're fighting all the time. So
you replace
it. Yeah, exactly.
If there's nothing to replace or to keep it back, it's just going to keep showing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you have something in there that it can't, so it can't even fit in, it can't even fit in. Because there's something else already
there's
there.
There's no room.
There's no room. And you know it's all because you can see it around you everywhere and everything like that, but it's just like walking through a minefield knowing the route.
That's so good. Yeah, I know. It is so great to be on this side of it because just the revelation that you get and clearly, even though you did not have a great experience, it taught you so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was.
I love pain, so I kind of looking back at it.
Yeah, because
that's what I learned. So going through it, I mean, I feel it. I feel pain.
Yeah,
I do.
I don't like pain. But I have a very low pain tolerance.
But when I get through with it, though, it's kind of like whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as you. So God was very kind.
Well, I had a crew that goes with me. And it's the same crew every time. And we go together and they're like me. So when we're in there, the staff have a name for us. They call us the Unusuals because when we come rolling in the door. Can you believe that? The Unusuals.
No, I do believe it.
And my crew is hardcore, man. We got through it together. All of us suffered. We suffered badly, and but all of us now are in so much better place.
Did they go all
every time,
the time?
Every freaking time. How about that?
That's some serious commitment
right
there.
It's commitment to each other. I would make the phone call on some of them and be like, guess what? And they're like, hey, man, good. Can we keep in touch? And I was like, hey, we got to go back. And you could just feel the dread, right?
Yes.
When it tells you you're coming back, you're just kind of like, oh, my God.
Oh, man.
And then on the last one, when we graduated, we all graduated together, and each one of them was like, yeah, it showed me that. And I graduated. I was like, yeah, we're done. We're through. And that's something.
So amazing.
Isn't that
amazing?
Yeah, it was great.
That scares me because I haven't graduated. So I'm wondering if I'm going to be called again.
I think you're good.
Yeah.
From what you said. I mean, but like I said, you know. And if it's peaceful.
Yeah.
And usually people who are already in touch with Jesus, when they go in spiritually. Yeah. Because my second, third ride, I was.
Yes, yes.
I had a rosary on my hand. And, wow. And the whole time I was in there and I prayed. And in there, I was praying and learning all that stuff too. So it was completely different than my first one. They sent me to hell.
So your second one wasn't a bad experience then?
I was in school.
Wow.
How about that?
That's really
good. Yeah, learning. I was in school, which I am in right now. It's kind of, it was a foreshadowing to what I'm having to do, but...
studying theology now and online.
Philosophy. But I trained for it like a Rocky fight. I tell people that. I was like, man, I did the breathing. I did everything I was supposed to do because when I checked in there, it asked me. And it went through my, hey, you hadn't been drinking, have you? I was like, no, sir.
Wow.
He's like, you hadn't touched, done anything? I'm like, no. I've been working out like you said. I've been reading. I was writing like you said. I was studying. I did my breathing work like you said. And then I did more of it. Like I tried to overachieve.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Because you don't want to mess up.
Extra points. Yes.
Yeah, I came in with some brownie points, right? And and so it got to business on me and corrected all and fixed everything in my head, took all that stuff away from me and put me on my path, showed me my purpose. Yeah, it did that for me.
What purpose did you walk away with?
So I was on the other, from an edge walker into the darkness, right, all the way back into the light, to where now my job is to be be a deacon in the church and wow. spread the word and kind of take all of my experiences from what I had to go through in the past, because it opens doors for me when I walk in.
Yeah,
like you're gonna try to be a deacon. Takes a long time. There's a long...
positive mindset, man. I'm doing it. I mean, they may not let me do
process.
It, but in my mind, I'm getting this freaking done.
I mean, I say where there's a Wendy, there's a way. So if I've declared it, then it shall be.
Yeah. I don't half-ass anything. I was like, hey, man, we're freaking doing this.
Right, yeah. Absolutely. I mean,
there may be
it.
Some
totally
stuff in my
it.
Way if somebody got some other plans, but for me, this is what it is. I don't have a choice. What it showed me.
Maybe you didn't hear what I said.
Yeah. I made myself perfectly clear.
Right, right.
And so that's why I study and... And I remember when I was a boy, I wanted to be that warrior mentality, walk the path. And then by the time I was almost dying, that my grandkids couldn't even imagine me violent.
Oh,
that,
wow.
That in my head was one of the coolest stories of a man.
Yeah, that's profound.
You couldn't even, and I my whole life I wanted to be like that. I was like, from in the beginning when you're young and you're wild and you're reckless and you fought in all the wars and all the that stuff, the wildness and wickedness and stuff like that. And then at the end of it, you're the peaceful, holy man that spreads the word that no one could even imagine you being upset. They've never even seen it. And even if someone told you a story about me and what I was capable of in my youth, you still wouldn't believe it. But the only reason that people know that it's a fact is because it was written down.
And do you see that developing in
Absolutely.
Your life?
Absolutely.
I mean, could you have ever imagined that in the midst of all the trauma that you were having to
deal
with?
I didn't know how I was going to get to it. Because I didn't think I was going to make it to 40. I really drank the Kool-Aid and got in there and loved being on the edge.
Yeah.
I mean, the drinking and all that craziness and wild and fighting and just war. I mean, I couldn't get enough of it, especially with the guys and everything, how hard we trained. I absolutely loved that. And I lost sight of that in my head. It wasn't even a thing. I didn't get raised in the faith. I didn't know anything about it. When y'all talk about Baptist and Methodist, I know what that was. I don't know why y'all argue with each other. I had no idea that Christians fight each other.
He doesn't understand like all of the different denominations.
It's because baffling
he wasn't raised
that y'all act
in
like
the churches.
That y'all act like that.
It is baffling.
And it's probably why a lot of people don't go into Christianity, because Christians fight each other and they always tell each other they're going to hell. And I was like, well, I don't want to be a part of that, dude. I mean, I'm not even one of y'all, and I tell you, you're not going to go to hell.
Well,
I mean,
it's not Christ-like.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
If we're going to call ourselves Christians, we should be Christ-like. Mm-hmm. And he was not Baptist or Methodist or, you know, he was just Christ.
Yeah. I'm not a convert or anything. I wasn't anything.
Right.
You know, and then I get to this point in my life. She found me. That was the first big thing.
Yeah,
you was
got
the first
very
push.
Lucky.
Yeah,
that
was a split in the road when she showed up. And then I started going in every day. I learned to watch and listen. That was kind of my main job and what I did for a living. And I mean, I see things pretty clearly, even when I was messed up. You know, I get a whiff of it. I'm like, okay. And then, well, the Iowa game made it perfectly clear.
It is very eye-opening.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of ambiguity in it. It's like,
isn't that great?
Yeah, mine. I just say God is an orderly God. He's going to put things in order for you. And if you're seeking him, you're going to find him. That's just biblical. And for those of us that was our mission and that was our goal when we went in, you know, he does not disappoint.
Yeah. It's like, you know, mechanics like fixing a dent in your car. They try to be smooth and gentle with it in the beginning. But do you ever notice that when no one's looking, he puts that boot into it or that hammer? That's kind of what the Ibogaine was.
Yeah, exactly.
He put that boot into me. And I was like, Roger that.
Appreciate that.
I'm here with you now. I got it. And once you can see it and it changed my perspective, and you can't unsee it, I took to it.
Yeah.
So now you're writing a book.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
The book is called The Christian's Guide to Psychedelics. So that was the most controversial title that we could come up with, because Christian and psychedelics aren't typically in the same sentence. I had a lot of other really good titles. I thought Heart Posture would be good, God's Good Gifts would be good, but people wouldn't let me off the hook. It is basically a book that it goes through my experience. It goes through why it was such a struggle for me growing up the way I did and believing I really thought I would go to hell for even trying this. And I mean, I was 33 before I tasted alcohol, and I filled up a bathtub full of water and sat in it before drinking the alcohol in case I spontaneously combusted. So I was very serious about not putting foreign substances or whatever into my body, because I didn't want to make God more mad at me, because you know how I felt, that he was always mad at me. But on the other side of it, and of course, when he told me to write the book, I think there's a lot of people that are like me that think that if you love Jesus, you should not need healing. You feel like there's something wrong with you, like you haven't prayed hard enough. You haven't, you know, gone to one more healing service. You haven't memorized enough scripture. There's got to be something spiritual that you haven't quite yet done. And everybody else seems to have gotten that, but something's broken with you. And that is just not the fact. And just because we love Jesus does not mean that we don't need healing. Some of our pain is from being hurt in the church. So what do you do with those people? When you've been hurt in the church, you're not turning to the church to get help, right? But this medicine, not a drug, this medicine is so divine that I believe, as you will read in chapter 4, that it is like every other good gift that God has given us. If you look at food, okay, very simple. Gift number one in my book. Food was given to us by God. Do we agree on that? Okay. Then has the enemy taken food and warped it and made it a weapon to hurt us? Yes. People can overeat. People can eat the wrong things and get heart disease. People can use food to control other people. That is never God's intention for food. God's intention was for us to be nourished by food, right? Every gift that he gives us, sex was meant to be enjoyed by a husband and a wife in the covenant of marriage. Has the enemy taken sex and warped it? Absolutely. But that's not how God created it, okay? I believe that everything that God creates, the enemy tries to warp. He can't create anything. He's not a creator. Okay, he's a created being. And so every good thing that God gives us for our enjoyment, he tries to take. And that's what I think has happened with psychedelics or plant medicine. I think that it has been thrown into this forbidden category because either religious or political figures either were just ignorant, willfully ignorant maybe, or just wanted it forbidden for whatever their personal reason was. And I think that the church needs to do a much better job of meeting people where they are and what they need. Because if not, you're going to have a lot more. I mean, I know the veteran community has between 20 and 40 suicides a day. Well, we just not long ago had a pastor in our community, a theologian that was amazingly brilliant about the Bible, that I talked to about the Bible and supported our ministry and everything. He shot himself behind the pulpit on a Tuesday night. No one even knew something was wrong. So when that happened, I thought that must be the answer. Because if that was his answer as this brilliant theologian, what hope do I have, right? And that's the enemy lying to us. And there's nothing wrong with needing help. I wish that he had felt the freedom to ask for help, but he didn't for whatever reason. And so the way that I feel is that I believe that God uses everything, even my dancing, right? He has used it to help women get out of that situation and to have hope. I just feel like that's what it is. I'm hope on the other side of the cross. But if I don't tell my story, then how are people going to know? The Bible says that they will know by the blood of the Lamb and the word of your testimony. This is my testimony. And my book is about my struggle with almost missing this miracle. And then what God revealed to me afterwards, that it would have been really great to have known beforehand because I wouldn't have been so afraid. But my book has over 250 scriptures in it, all about how all through scripture, from Genesis 1:12, when God created the plants and said it was good, all the way to Revelation 22:2, where in the new heaven and the new earth, it says the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nation. Well, why are we still needing healing in the afterlife? Like that's one of those that I'm still wrestling with. But the tree of life is there. And that's what it's referring to, is the tree of life. The leaves of that tree are for the healing of the nations. So if God's put such an emphasis on it, and that's just the first and last chapter of the Bible, and it's all throughout scripture. In fact, like the balm of Gilead and all the things like that were used as gifts when a king was coming and they would give him gifts, or somebody was traveling, they would take gifts. These were all things that God created, and they were used as ointments and medicines and all. So it's all through the Bible. But if we don't study the Bible for that reason, you could miss it. I mean, I can't imagine how many other things are in there that I haven't done a deep dive on that I'm excited about learning, because I never knew all of this was in there, but it is. And it is, and it's not just my story. Your story is going to be in there. Brian Hubbard's wife's story is in there. There are many Christians who have taken Ibogaine and other different psychedelic-assisted therapies for therapeutic reasons. This is not a call for, you know, recreational drugs or anything like that, but for reasons of healing, and have not just gotten healed, but have drawn closer to the Lord in their healing. I think sometimes when your brain is so messed up, you're in survival mode. You know, seeking the Lord is like, you know, like that's the last thing you're thinking about. You're trying to survive the day. But when God can reset that through something as powerful as an Ibogaine that goes in and literally works on the neural pathways of your brain, and then you start thinking clearer, and then you can have normal thoughts, and you can seek after him, and you can read the Bible and have calm and ingest the word, which is what changes us from the inside. So it's a journey. But if you don't start that journey because you're fearful and you don't want to burst into flames or go to hell or make God more mad, then what is that? That's the enemy winning with the lies that he's told. And unfortunately, I think some of our pastors and clergy have just fallen into that, you know, we're just going to throw it in the forbidden pit, you know, because we don't understand it, or it's too much, like, you know, we might be condoning. But you don't hear of a pastor standing up and like saying, okay, I know you need a heart transplant, but you can't take any anesthesia, you know, because ketamine is an anesthesia they might give you in the operating room. Well, it's also used for psychedelic-assisted therapy, but that's not accepted, but you can go and have your heart transplant. Do you see what I'm saying? It's got to be used in the means for which God meant to use it, and for our good and his glory.
Yeah, I agree. When does it come out?
Well, the first 14 chapters came out already, and the reason I pre-published it was because I found out I was going to an event where Governor Perry and Brian Hubbard were going to be, and I had watched Joe Rogan, and I was so excited because I knew they were both Christians. So I was like, I have to let them read this book. So I gave both of them a copy of the book, and since then, I have found out that Governor Perry is now writing a foreword for my second edition, and Brian Hubbard is writing an endorsement. So very excited about that. But the last three chapters are almost done. I have a couple more testimonies to get into chapter 15. And then chapter 16 is about like kind of where we are with Americans for Ibogaine right now. And chapter 17 is a call to action, how somebody can, you know, either get involved with the retreat or if they want to do something to help move the movement forward.
Awesome. When do you think that'll come out?
Definitely the first half of 26. If I can get some people moving, my husband calls it windy time. Not everybody is on windy time. I said, I don't understand what you're saying. Like, I thought everybody was on windy time, but yeah, I'm pretty ready, but, I'm just waiting on a few people that aren't on windy time. So hopefully in the first half.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming down here and sharing your story.
Great job. God bless you.
Thank you very much. God bless you guys, too. Y'all are doing amazing work. I'm just thankful to be a small part.
Thank you.
The Team Never Quit podcast is proudly sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Navy Federal is here to help you dominate your debt with a platinum card. Go check out how they can help you at NavyFederal.org.